You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
How are you feeling after that, Matt?
I feel a lot better than Bob.
Extra Time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Get lost.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
From New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental from my apartment in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partner in soccer, just the one today, Charlie Davies. Think we can handle this, Charlie? Dave, somewhere on a mountain somewhere in Colorado, I feel. Just doing Dave thing, trying to find hummus in the middle of the Rockies, something like that. I don't know, man.
Meditating on the Rockies.
Does he strike you as someone who would meditate? Do you meditate?
I don't meditate, but I do see a future of meditation for Goss, for Empire Goss.
All right. Maybe we'll have to get him like a nice little thought journal.
Yeah.
Just so he can make sure he gets his thoughts in order before he comes on this show. He'll be back, of course, on Monday. We got a big show. Mark McKenzie is going to join us. He had a decent night last night. Did you see when you were playing with Mark, when you were at the Union and he was a young buck, did you see this right leg? Did you realize that's a cannon, man?
No. And if anybody tells you that they've seen it, they're lying.
Wow.
He pulled that out of the locker. But it's nice to know that he does have it in him. So I was happy to see him get his first professional goal.
Big stuff for the Union, too, by the way. They are the second team to qualify for the Audi MLS Cup playoffs, in addition to Toronto FC. And big stuff for Mark McKenzie this year. You know, he got into camp in January before all the COVID stuff went down. Jim Curtin is saying, hey, it's Brendan Aaronson, it's him. They're going to go to Europe. It's just a matter of when we get the right offer. So we have a lot to talk about with Mark McKenzie. By the way, though, 2020, an indication of the times. Only one of the top eight teams in the Supporters Shield were in action, or out of action, I should say, on Wednesday night. Only one, none of those won. None of the other seven won. Not a single W for them. A bunch of losses among those teams. It is really just a toss-up. We'll talk about all this stuff on Wednesday. We'll talk to Mark McKenzie. We'll go through some mail. But first, because it is a sign of the times, we got to talk about COVID. Big news for the Sounders, for Major League Soccer. Raul Ruy Diaz picking up COVID-19, testing positive while on international duty with Peru. So I am no expert as to the process that he's going to have to get back on the field in MLS. What I do know is that we wish him, his family, Weston McKennie, who, by the way, with Juventus, tested positive. Well, anybody who's experienced this going through it, I've done it myself. We wish you well. We wish the best for you and your family. And we hope you're back with us on the field or wherever it is very, very soon. We do have an email, though, that we're going to start with, Charlie. And we haven't discussed this because we didn't know how it was going to go, and we still don't. We don't know any more than anybody else out there. But JD McCall, who's a legend in these parts, hits us up all the time, says, guys, with all the Rapids games that have been postponed, how do you feel about using points per game instead of points earned to determine playoff spots? And there were more games on Wednesday postponed for COVID reasons. Minnesota was not able to play against the Chicago Fire. How do you feel about this from a competitive sense, Charlie? How should they go about figuring this out, even with an expanded playoff field?
No doubt it's a difficult time for everyone, but everyone's playing under the same circumstances. And it's unfortunate, but if your team goes down with COVID and there's a mass spread and you can't play matches week after week after week, and all of a sudden, you know, you're four or five games out and teams are still competing and playing, then there's an unfair advantage when you come back, because a lot of these teams, they're playing a ton of matches in a short amount of time. So there's fatigue. There's the mental anguish of having to deal with the times that we're in. So I think if you're not playing, 20 games, maybe we talked about it earlier, that if you don't meet a certain threshold, then you can't be eligible to make the playoffs. Just like we saw in the MLS's back tournament. FC Dallas, Nashville, didn't have their house in order. Now, it doesn't have to be anyone's fault, but everyone's dealing with the same circumstances when it comes to COVID. You have to stay isolated. You have to go from practice to home and stay at home. And if there is an outbreak, being able to contain it. And if you can't, then it's just the harsh reality that you got to go. You cannot continue to delay games, not play while all these other teams are you know, basically putting all these miles on their legs, and then all of a sudden you get to come in and beat them because you got all the fresh legs and you know, you have an advantage. So I'm with you, Weeby, in the sense that it's just unfortunate, but if you can't continue to play, then you got to move on.
I think I'm going to throw something out there, and I'm straight up working off the top of my head right now. So look, if it's imperfect or if it has problems, please, Charlie, call me out. Be like, that doesn't make any sense at all to me. We should not do that. Right now, the Colorado Rapids, just as an example, because again, they're not the only team that this is happening to. It's just that they've had the most prolonged, and they now have, I believe it's 3 games through that 10-day span to try to get things right within the team and to get negative tests across the board. They had 3 more games, quote unquote, postponed, but it's hard to imagine where they fit it all in. So they've played 13 games, whereas the teams around them in the Western Conference, many have played 18, some have played 16, some have played 17. I think every team, when you get to the end of the season, you're supposed to have played 23 games. I think if you have not played 20 games, then you should not be in consideration.
Correct.
For the playoffs. And this is just my opinion. This is not something I've heard. This is not something that I'm like pulling from sources. This is just me saying this right now. So if you have not played 20 games, I don't think you should be considered. But if you have played 20 games because of the circumstances, because I don't think it is necessarily anyone's fault, this is just the state of society right now. It's the society that we all live in. Then anybody who's played 20 games or more, go by points per game. And I think that's okay. I think it's okay to go by points per game. And I think it's okay to have things be a little bit different. I think it's okay to say, you know, this is an outlier asterisk year, and we are going to have to be flexible and change some of the rules and deal with it the way we have to in the moment. So at that point, if you've gotten back up to that, into the playoffs you go. If you haven't, I'm sorry, but it is like the Dallas or Nashville situations. Shut it down.
Yeah.
Let's go back the next year. Let's make sure the playoffs can go forward in the right way. And as you said, let's make sure everybody's doing the right thing so the playoffs don't have issues at the same time. It's very complicated. It's very difficult.
It's an instance where if all the teams are taking the responsibility to make sure that they're staying healthy and able to compete, they should not be penalized. They shouldn't be penalized because other teams haven't been able to keep it together, whether it's their fault or not. At the end of the day, every team, every club has to go through the same process of making sure that they're doing everything they can in their power to play without COVID, to not get it, and to be healthy. So if a team plays every single game and didn't have to miss one because they did their due diligence, they were, they could be trusted to do their job, then yeah, I'm 100% with you that those other teams, you got to go.
It's tough. It's not something that we want to say or be talking about, but it is the reality of our world right now. Let's get into something more positive. Let's get into Caden Clark.
Wow. Woo. Let's do it.
Woo. So he starts his first match this weekend, the morning after signing, and he scores the winner. And then he comes in, he scores the game-tying goal off the bench against Toronto FC, just the best team in the Eastern Conference. He receives the ball in traffic. He takes a perfect touch inside. He fights off the pressure. And then this time, instead of the right peg, it's the left peg. And this time, instead of getting it past Brad Guzan, it's just a laser beam to the top corner, top bends, as they might say, upper 90. Left foot again, both feet now. 2 goals in his first 2 games. The kid is 17 years old. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to hype him too much, Charlie, but he's making it really hard.
Well, he has the potential. Similar to a young Brent Aaronson, right? You see these qualities in a player where your head's on a swivel. You're aware of your surroundings. Before the ball comes, you can see him take a look, knowing that he can turn to the right because the players had dropped off. And at TFC, I think this season, have tended to drop off. The Omar Gonzalez, Chris Mavinga partnership, which we'll get into later, hasn't been as strong as I think TFC had hoped. So he turns and he takes advantage of the gap. He found that pocket, turned, and then just could let it fly. And when you have a player who's aggressive, who can take advantage of opportunities like that at a young age in the professional level against a strong TFC team, yeah, it's okay to start thinking about the future, because he does have a promising one. Now, it's still a process, and we're going to talk to Mark McKenzie it's not given. You have to earn everything and you have to continue to be pushed. So I think that he's got a good head on his shoulders, and I think he's surrounded by the right people to make sure that it doesn't go to your head. You have to continue to push yourself, continue to improve every single day. And once you get in that environment and that mentality, I think we're going to see a lot more from it, from this young kid.
And I don't think it's getting to his head. You know, he was happy. He was excited in the postgame interview. He's like, man, I'm glad that I came in and did that. But he said right after that, we have bigger things to worry about. I think that's a great sign. I also think that maybe this season, as weird and bizarre as it is a good time for young players like Caden Clark to come in, because he doesn't need to start every game. There doesn't need to be pressure on the club to put him in the lineup right away and say, hey, he's one of your best players. You got to do this. Because of the, you know, Wednesday, Saturday, Sunday, back and forth, midweek, weekend cadence, you can just start him once a week. If that's what you want to do, just start him once a week, bring him off the bench in the other one, maybe bring him off the bench twice. If you think maybe his legs aren't there, you need to give somebody else a run. Like, there's no requirement. There's no pressure on the Red Bulls to just push this kid into the lineup and let it go. Now, I do want to get to this from Dan, who hits us up all the time from up, I believe, in Vancouver. And he says, a few weeks ago, it was Cade Cowell. This week it's Caden Clark. By the way, Cade Cowell had a nice assist this week too. I'm all in on hashtag play your kids, but from a team perspective, where's the line between putting too much pressure on these kids and giving them the chance to step up and grow? How should the Red Bulls handle this?
Well, I think as long as he continues to earn it every day in training and he's putting performances like this, you play him. There's no reason to take him out and let him watch again. If you're 17, no matter what your age is, and you can bring it every day, and you're going to perform at a high level, then you deserve to be on the field and you're earning your minutes. So there's no need to take the foot off the gas. And I think there is a hesitation across the league that, man, he's too young. I don't want to put too much pressure on him. No, if he's ready for it, let him go out there and continue to perform. It happens all across the world. If you deserve it, if you earn it every single day in training, because you're going to be pushed and there's ups and downs, but if you can stay mentally level and positive, you're going to be on the field and you're going to help the team. And clearly, this is a kid who can help Red Bulls win. So you want your best players on the field. You want players who can contribute. In my eyes, there's no reason to take the foot off the gas and take him off the field. Until he starts performing, he has those lackluster performances, until you see fatigue, mental or physical. Until that point, ride him.
Let it roll.
Let
it roll. We'll see. I mean, they're going to have to balance this. They've done it before with Tyler Adams. Mm-hmm. Of course, they've done it many times in the organization, whether it's at Leipzig or it's at Salzburg, et cetera, et cetera. This is not something new to the Red Bulls. Before we get to Mark McKenzie, I do just want to say I turned in my 2222 presented by Body Armor ballot this week, and it crushed me internally. Like, it tore me up. It was so difficult. My top six or seven, I was just like, bam, 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 bam. Got it. I know who I want to put here. I know what order I feel. But then from about six or seven till about 30, I was just like, it's a crapshoot. It depends on form. It depends on the moment. It depends on the opportunities they're getting at club level. The one thing I do know, though, is that Caden Clark was not available to me because he had not signed when the list was finalized to be on the list. If he was now available to you, would you be pushing him into your 2222? And how high would you be pushing him?
I would be pushing him into my 2222. How high? I'm not sure.
Top 15 for me. Definitely top 15, and that's not to say that I don't think Caden Clark is in a top five talent. It's right. Just to say that this year, the way I voted was on MLS contributions number one.
And I'm just
I'm tired of guessing about potential. Potential can change. You can get injured. You can have a change in coach. You can have that mental lapse you talked about. You know, Andrew Carlton is an example of a guy with the talent to be high on that list who had a blip, who's now coming back up. Caden Clark would be on my list. I know that. No doubt about it. Look, it's going to come out next week, the 2222 list presented by Body Armor. We'll talk about it then. In the meantime, let's get to a guy that's most certainly, in my opinion, going to be top five. It's Mark McKenzie. It's an AT&T 5G call to the field. Mark, what's up, man? How you feeling?
No, I'm tired for sure. We got hit late last night in the game, but I'm feeling good. You know, it was a tough result last night. You know, credit to DC. They came out and really put us under pressure, so... you know, we came out with the point. We're able to clinch playoff spot. So now it's about fighting for that supporter shield and finishing number one. And you know, in the league. So
yeah, big goals, man. But Charlie said you did not have the right footed banger in the locker in the intro here before you got on. I was a little surprised. Not that surprised. Were you surprised? Were you just like, I'm going to hit this and see what happens?
No, I mean, it came right out to me. It was a straight roller right at the top of the 18.
Okay.
I said, you know what? I don't skip leg day. I got the technique. Put your foot through it and put it on target. And the rest handled itself. So, you know, I got a deflection, took a deflection, but like a goal is a goal, right? Your strike is
gone. I'm glad you admitted it. I'm glad you said it.
No, and 100%. And it wasn't just around the 18. That was probably 25. We're talking 25. This wasn't right on the top of the box.
Yeah.
But regardless, you score the goal, you see it hit the back of the net, your first professional goal. That's the celebration you give me? That's the celebration you give me?
Listen, if the circumstances were different, I would have celebrated a different way. But, you know, look, we were trying to get the third goal and we were trying to get 3 points. So,
you can still fight for the third goal.
Yeah, of course. But look, man, look, it was a professional, you know, professional goal. So, okay. You know what, we're going to take it. We're going to get back and keep it moving, you know.
With that being said, what's the plan for a proper goal celebration when you score the next time?
Oh, trust me. I got that already sorted out. Yeah.
Okay. So you have something planned.
Oh, yeah.
Is this a solo celebration or is this a group celebration?
It depends. You know, if I'm with the homegrowns, you know, the homegrowns, we got something, you know, sorted out already. And if it happens to be, you know, a solo celly, you know, I'll take it that direction too. So look, we got plan A, plan B. So.
Okay.
All right, well, we're going to wait that moment. I'm ready for that one. I hope it comes at Subaru Park, even though things are not, you know, the fans are not there and the numbers that they used to be, which is, by the way, if people don't know, it's a voting site in the election this year. And you were a big part of making that happen. Mark, tell us about how Subaru Park came to be as a place where people could go do their civic duty.
No, it's first and foremost, it's an extremely important right that we have as citizens. So we sat down with stakeholders, myself and, you know, Ale. A couple other guys, sat down with some owners and stakeholders and let them know, like, listen, Chester is a disenfranchised community, and it's an important community to reach, you know, and to express how important this is. So we see how many people didn't vote in the last election, and now coming up in a crucial time for this country, we figured that, you know, we would do our part and open our stadium because, again, we have the facilities, we have the space, we have the resources, we have the connections, so why not? You know, reach out and let those in the community know we're here to support them and we want them to come out.
That's great work from you and the whole club. Can I just ask you personally, I think this is your first presidential election. What does it mean to you, this opportunity to cast a vote, to be a part of this process, to do it for the first time?
Yeah, it's something new for me, but, you know, I've heard all throughout my life how important it is to vote. And we see, just like I said, in the last election, how many millions of people not voting. One, either because you don't feel like it or you don't feel like your vote counts or, you know, whatever the excuse may be. But at the end of the day, this is something that we all need to step up and take hold of because we see how much it can affect the country, you know, in the grand scheme of things. But not only at the presidential level, we look at the local level and who we put in office for our state representatives. You know, these are the individuals who we want to represent us, to speak for us. And if we don't have those in office who are going to do that, then we're going to find ourselves in a deeper hole than we ever anticipated. So,
Mark, I love how you're an outspoken, confident individual, and you're a part of the Black Players for Change. Mm-hmm. I know you're not on the board, but what's your involvement like with them, and how do you continue to use the Black Lives Matter movement as a way to kind of influence what needs to be done in the country?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Black Players for Change is a big step in the right direction, and we all realize that. So for us to come together with a unified voice, although we have the executive board, they all reach out and make sure that each individual player knows how important, again, like voting is. Each player's voice is extremely important. So we have meetings, you know, regularly throughout the month to make sure we're checking in and keeping things on task. We're not getting swayed, you know, by outside, the outside environment or outside situations. And ultimately, we come back together and the executive board, they speak for us. But again, it's a unified voice. And even as a young guy, I think it's important to make sure that the older guys who are more experienced than us, who have gone through different experiences than us, also know where we're coming from. And I think that's what helps make this Black Lives Matter change so important.
It's been an emotional year for everybody. I'm curious, Mark, what emotions that you've gone through, what process have you gone through as, you know, Black Lives Matter has really brought something to the forefront that should have been there for hundreds of years, basically.
Yeah, it's been a mix of emotions for me. It's been definitely been a roller coaster. You know, my parents, you know, my first experience of you know, a situation with police was when I was, I think, like 7 years old, and I was headed to a basketball game with my dad, and we were driving through a suburban community. And at the time, he had a red Acura, you know, I think it was a 2006 Acura. And as we're driving to this basketball game, a police officer pulls us over in the community, asking us where we're going, you know, where we got our vehicle from. And just seeing the reaction and the emotion from my dad was something that stuck with me and still stick with me to this day. How he had both hands on the steering wheel, how his whole tone of voice, you know, changed, how he had to act in a manner in order to make sure that he came out alive, but also his son also came out, you know, not more traumatically scarred than, you know, a lot of these situations we see today, and have happened over the past, you know, 4 or 5 centuries now. So, you know, with everything going on, it's definitely been up and down, and I've had to find time for myself to kind of collect myself and make sure I'm speaking, you know, with wisdom and not speaking simply out of rage or frustration, but also making sure that I am speaking up because there's a lot of people whose voices are suppressed, and I have a platform and a duty, you know, as a black man, you know, aside from being an athlete, to speak up and to make sure that my voice is heard, and encourage, you know, many others to do the same.
So. We appreciate your voice, man. Let's talk about soccer. We could talk about this all day, but let's get to the soccer. The Union has changed, has grown a lot since you arrived. What makes this, and it's just my opinion, the best team that you guys have ever had?
I think it's a mix of our leadership and our youth. We have, I think, like 7 or 8 homegrowns on the roster now. But we also have that balance of leadership of guys who are veterans and have been in the different situations, you know, that arise in matches. You know, with guys like Ale, who's played at the highest level in Europe, but also here and led the team for the Union for many years now. And then I think the youth swag that you see with guys like Fonte, that you see Anthony, you know, and Matt, guys coming up. You know, we got Jack DeFries, Cole Turner. You know, we have some homegrowns coming in. You see these goals scored by like Jack McGlynn, Paxton Harrison. So I think that flair, that mix, that combination of our veteran leadership and our youth is something that helps distinguish us and help put us in this position we are now. But also, I think an intensity in being bought into what we do and knowing who we are. I think that's the biggest thing. If we don't know our identity, then ultimately we're going to be caught in two minds and never going to be able to reach our potential. So
I know Richie Graham has had a ton of influence with a lot of these youngsters running YSC, but how have you developed over the years? I remember seeing you coming on to the scene as a young gun in training with the Bethlehem Steel, trying to rough me up. where have you developed? How have you developed? And what are your strengths? And yeah, I think with all good players, you understand your weaknesses. So how do you assess your weaknesses and how do you work on them?
Yeah, well, first and foremost, it was more Chuck and Mo and Gooch roughing me up, you know, more than anything else. Right? I was a young guy and he got bullying me, so yeah. But no, for me personally, I think I've always been a ball playing center back. You know, I've always taken pride in my abilities with the ball. But at the end of the day, as a defender, your job is to defend. And that's one area that I really want to improve on, just coming up, one, through the academy, but two, as you get into, you know, the higher ranks of professional football. You see how marginal the game is and how one decision can you know, either help you win a game or you lose a game. We see against Toronto, for example, my positioning, if I bump Io before he even is able to get a run on the ball, things may be different. You know, the outcome may be different. So it's things like that I think have helped, you know, put me now in a position to climb, you know, and to jump into the realm of being one of the best center backs in the league. You know, aside from being a good young center back, you know, I think that was an ambition for me to come in now and fight for MLS Defender of the Year. You know, I had a rough first 2 years, a rough second year, I should say. 2018 was a high, you know, rookie of the year finalist, but then 2019 comes and knocks you and hits you with a reality check. So I think that's one area now for me that I've really grown is the mental aspect.
Can I just ask you before I get to the mental aspects? I want to talk to you about that in 2019. Just lay it out there, man. Charlie Davies, Union. Just air your grievances, Mark. Air your grievances. What did these bullies do to you?
I wouldn't be doing him justice if I didn't bully him, if I didn't show him the ropes. Come on now.
Yeah, fair enough. Look, I'm glad I went through that experience. All right, I remember there was one training session where we were doing, I think, 6-a-side tournament, and I was playing against Mo one time, and I fouled him. You know, I gave him a nice bump in the, you know, it was like the back shoulder, so you know, he stumbled a little bit. Man, let me tell you, the next play, he absolutely demolished me. Mind you, I'm like 16, 17 years old. All right, maybe like 160. All right, I'm still a skinny, frail kid. And Mo coming in here look colossal, you know, run me over. Like that.
He's in the gym.
I mean,
his biceps are like as big as my head.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And then here comes Chuck over here with these freaking massive thighs. So now I got to try and block one of his shots. I'm like, all right, bro. I don't know what y'all want me to do. But I love these guys, you know, and they helped show me the ropes at an early age. And, you know, I appreciate those experiences. So, having these relationships with them has definitely helped me now. And being able to reach out and pick their brains, has helped put me now in a great spot.
What's it like to be a 16-year-old in those trainings? Like, as you're walking in, as you're hitting the locker room, as you're going on the field, as you're thinking, you know, Quadzilla over here, Charlie Davies, got to deal with him. Like, what's going through your mind? What's that experience like for people that haven't ever had a chance to do something like that?
No, it's one of like, at a moment, you're like in awe and you're like, oh, shoot, these are guys you watch on TV. You go into the stadiums, you get to buy tickets to go watch them play on the weekend. And then now you're sitting next to them in the locker room, you know, and laughing and joking with them. But then when we step onto the field, it's a battle, you know? So I think that that combination is what like really gave me a taste of wanting to play at the next level, you know, wanting to compete with these guys.
We'll get to the next level in a second. I want to go back to 2019 because I remember 2018 vividly, and you and Austin. I think we were at a hotel somewhere. I sat down with you guys and was passing the mic back and forth, and it was, you know, two young guys just feeling like, man, the world is at our feet. And then 2019 kind of pulled the rug out a little bit on you. We always talk about like, oh, what are your weaknesses as a player? Like, oh, I can get better with the big switch, like decision making, this, that, and the other. But there's so much more to it. There's the mental side of just a person. What was 2019 like for you? How did you get through it? How did you grow?
It was definitely a roller coaster, I'd say. You know, you go into 2019 after having a good 2018 and get my first senior team call up and go into camp, you know, excited and hungry. I think it was the youngest guy on the roster, actually. And, you know, to go in there and have that experience was one that was, you know, surreal for me, exciting. It gave me a taste, you know, for wanting to continue to climb the ranks of the national team. And then going into preseason, ready for another follow-up year. And then to now be injury stricken probably for like three and a half, four months straight. It was just back to back, you know, it was almost debilitating and frustrating, you know, to get a concussion. Then after that, pick up an ankle knock. And then after that, you know, working your way back into the lineup. And then boom, right when I was about to get my first start of the year against Montreal, appendicitis. Now I'm out. Now it's in that window where I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to go to the U-20 World Cup, if I'm going to be fit enough, if I'm going to be healthy enough, and trying to, you know, battle through that and find my footing, and then get to the U-20 World Cup. And, you know, I was named captain, which was it was an honor, you know, to be even be at the World Cup, you know, and to be named captain, it just added to it. But it was ultimately disappointing not to be fit enough or at my fullest capabilities to be able to compete and help the team. But I think that was an experience that I had to go through in order to understand that for me to be the best player I could be, the mental aspect was going to be that much more important. To go to the U-20 World Cup, not play, but find a different role as a leader off the field, making sure guys are staying tuned in, making sure that guys aren't getting complacent, making sure guys who aren't playing are continuing to fight for a spot, you know, and that raises the level of competition in the camp. And now it helps raise the level of play on the field when we go out against France. You know, when they were to get a victory against, you know, the contender, ultimately one of the favorites to win the tournament. I think that ultimately put me in a good spot. Now to come back to the club and now fight for my spot and understand what it was going to take, to understand that it's going to take me rolling up my sleeves. You know, it's not going to be pretty. It's not going to always go my way. You know, the calls aren't always going to go my way. I'm not going to get the nod from the manager. I may not, you know, get the playing time I want, but ultimately to stick through and to fight through that difficult time. And ultimately to then make my return in August, you know, it was like a full circle for me. But again, it was an experience and it was a year that I had to go through. And I think that it's helped me get to where I am now. And it's something that I keep, you know, inside, because ultimately the situation is nice right now. But again, your career can go up and down, you know, at any point. Mm-hmm. And I think every young footballer needs to understand that, no matter how great you are, how much potential you have, you know, life will knock you down. But it's about, you know, rolling your sleeves up, dusting yourself off, and you know, flexing your muscles a little bit.
I like that.
To show who you truly are. So
let's talk about the U.S. men's national team, because we have to at this point. Greg Berhalter loves ball playing center backs. He wants to build out of the back. He wants players who are comfortable on the ball. You're that guy. But initially at that first camp, maybe was the play a little too fast, that adjustment period from going from, you know, MLS Rookie of the Year candidate to, oh, full national team, and kind of getting into the rhythm and seeing the speed of play with, you know, some of the country's best players. What have those conversations been like with Greg Berhalter? You know, have you been able to talk to him recently and saying, hey, where do you see my future? What club do you think or league would best suit my skill set, or allow me to develop into the player you need me to be, or the player I can be?
Yeah, these are real conversations. You know, these aren't, you know, sugar coated, or, you know, these are conversations that get right to the point. And I think that's what helps me the most. I recognize, and we had a conversation in my first camp in 2019 of just where I was lacking. And what areas my game in. I think it was the speed of play was the biggest thing for me, seeing things before they happen. Of course, there's you know, little mistakes that you can make, but those things at the international level are going to get you picked out and ultimately hurt the team. So I think understanding how fast the game is and how quicker decisions have to be is one thing that I really took away from that camp. But two, also not depending on my athletic abilities, you know, putting myself in positions to now put out fires before they even happen, being proactive. And then playing out the back was, you know, something that Greg always talks about. I said I needed to work on my technique. And that was something that I really needed to work on. And I recognized that and went into, you know, the year just getting ready for that.
What's that mean, your technique? For people out there that are like, I hear that and I think I understand that, but what's it mean?
Yeah, so for me, if you wanted to ball playing center back, you got to have the composure, you know, to receive the ball from a goalie out of a buildup, you know, and understand that pressure is going to come, but knowing where your outlets are, you know, can you play it back to the goalie? Can you be wider than that striker, that winger who's coming to press you? So now your touch can take you away and beat him. Or are you going to have to be inside in order to keep an angle for you to bounce it to your six? And now you can play out wide. So one, that's one area. Two, playing through the lines. That's the biggest thing, you know, that I continue to work on, understanding that one pass can break down an entire team's, you know, pressure. If you're able to take a touch and take out their winger, their 9, their 10, and even an 8, and now put your playmakers in positions to now turn and create going forward, that helps. You know, I can't express how much. You know, so those are just two areas in which, you know, my technique needs to really come into play.
Can I ask you about recognizing that moment to break the lines? Because I'm thinking right now of the pass you played to Brendan Aaronson, and that thing was making the rounds, as we always, you know, as the soccer Twitter machine does. How do you know when? What do you see? When are the moments where you're like, it's on and go? Can I ask you about recognizing that moment to break the lines? Because I'm thinking right now of the pass you played to Brendan Aaronson, and that thing was making the rounds, as we always, you know, as the soccer Twitter machine does.
When we're building out.
How do you know when? What do you see? When are the moments where you're like, it's on and go?
That pass to the outside back. If I can give him a slight misdirection to shape my body to now play as if I'm going to play my outside back, and now find my near side 8 or the 10 even in a higher pocket, I think that little bit of again misdirection, you know, is going to open that gap for now you to play into it, or simply taking a touch forward, causing a striker or a midfielder to step out to you, now creates a spot for your midfielder, your outside back, your winger to now find a space, and now I can turn and play.
Mark, you're playing against some of the world's best players, you know, with the youth national teams. You go to the World Cup, you see the level, and then you see a player like William Saliba, the French center back, go to Arsenal, and you're like, I feel like I'm in that conversation. I'm maybe in that skill level, if not better than that player. So what goes into your mind when you're seeing some of the players that you're competing against, that you're getting the better of playing at some of these clubs or getting signed by some of these big clubs? Does that kind of start to stoke a flame? Does that kind of, okay.
Absolutely. No, I mean, you go out there and you compete against, you know, these players, you know, your age, and I'm looking like, ah, he's good, but I think I'm better. Not in an arrogant way, but in a confident way, you know, and like I have that self-confidence to know I can compete with these guys and even be better than them. Mm-hmm. I think that definitely lit a fire in me. And I always had that fire, but sometimes you need a bit more gasoline to ignite it even more. And I think the U-20 World Cup gave me a taste for that even more. And that ultimately now has given me the push to want to play at the highest levels in the world. Not saying that I didn't have it before, but going out against them and putting, you know, my abilities in contest with them is something that, one, I look forward to, but two, is something that I've always dreamed of. So now to be in that spot and have these, you know, potential clubs having interest in you is something that, you know, I've always dreamt of and I look forward to taking these next steps.
Jim Curtin, quote right here, long story short, Mark McKenzie and Brendan Aaronson are both ready to go to Europe. One, it's got to feel nice to hear that from your head coach in a public sense. But I wonder how much is going on within your mind, your camp, within the club itself. I mean, you hear about Reggie Cannon and he's talking to FC Dallas and they're working the plan out. You know what I mean? They're like, this is the goal. We will, when the right thing comes, we're doing it. We're both on the same page. Do you feel that with the Union? Do you feel that with Jim, with Ernst?
Yeah, I think we're at a good point with the club right now. Well, we're flying high, you know, and I think we need to continue to do well. And again, my primary focus is to help the club, you know, win all the way through, you know, mm-hmm. you know, hopefully to the MLS Cup and lift the trophy for this club. And I've came up in this club since I was 12, you know, 10, 11, 12. So to lift the trophy and lift the first trophy for them is something that, you know, I ultimately want to be part of. But two, as a, you know, personally, my dream is to play at the highest levels in international football, you know, both domestically and for my national team. And the only way to do that is to compete with the best players in the world, you know, to go out against the Mbappes and Neymars, you know, to test myself. And that's only going to happen if I make that next step to Europe. So, yeah, it's definitely exciting. But I think the humility that my parents have instilled in me is something that, you know, I've really leaned on, you know, in this time, because again, going back to 2019, it was a gut check, you know, and now having that and going forward, I look forward to these next steps and you know, hopefully in the near future to play at the highest levels in European football.
What is the next step? Because I on this show I said I didn't think Celtic was the right fit for you, and the reason I said that is because the Scottish Premier League is not that difficult, right? You have Rangers, you have Celtic, and that's it. That is it. When you look across Europe, you have Ligue 1 in France, fantastic competition. You have Bundesliga, fantastic competition. You have, you know, obviously Serie A, English Premier League, all these talented leagues. I think you need to go to a league where you're going to get competition every single week and where they play. It's not long ball and in a typical style. And no disrespect to a club like Celtic who are, you know, someone who's competed in Champions League.
Watch out for those Celtic fans. Watch out for those Celtic fans.
Henrik Larsson's one of my favorite Celtics of all time. He made his name at Celtic. But with that being said, where do you see yourself fitting in?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, again, a ball-playing league is a league that, you know, I want to be part of. You know, I think that's, again, that's where you're going to be tested, you know. And I can't say what the future holds right now, but ultimately I do see myself playing against, again, these world class, you know, nines, these world class tens, these world class sevens and elevens who are going to put me under, you know, pressure both defensively and with the ball. But having the capabilities to know that I can play and compete against them is something that I'm looking forward to, and it's something that is pushing me, you know, day in and day out. So, you know,
makes me feel good. Makes me feel good with what I said. That's all I got to say.
You better believe that Charlie's going to come with Ligue 1 off the jump. The first league he's mentioning is always going to be Ligue 1. Fantastic competition.
Hey,
what an incredible
Bigging
place.
You up.
Hey, yeah, he is hyping you up.
You up on IG. He said,
yeah, that's hey, my boy.
You know, exactly. Hey, my man in MLS is doing it. And all these European suitors are interested. Go get him. That's what he was saying. He was basically saying, go get him.
Yeah, that's my boy. That's my boy. So, you know, we share the love.
Okay. Do you talk? I mean, it's your peers, it's the guys you're a youth national team with. I mean, right now is such a swell of players in the same position that you want to be in Europe. Champions League, playing at the highest level. How much do you talk to those guys? How much do you pick their brains? What do they tell you? What do you ask?
Yeah, no, I mean, one is, what is it like, you know, and I think that's a general question, but it's also layered where you can ask, what's lifestyle like? What's it like in the club? What's the club dynamic like? How is it playing against, you know, these players day in and day out? You know, how is what's the intensity like in training session? What are the demands? So I think these are all questions that I ask, and they give, you know, quality feedback, you know, but ultimately it's about the personal experience, I think. So the only way for me to understand it fully is to be over there, you know, and to compete. So, you know, whichever club that is, you know, I think that it's going to be an experience of a lifetime. But I have aspirations to play at the highest levels, you know, to play Champions League football. I think that's as simple as it is. You know,
Champions League, not Europa League, right?
Champions League.
Just throwing it out there.
Now you're getting Arsenal fans, Charlie? Dang. You're just killing people.
Don't do that to
me.
Hey,
no bashing against Europa League by any means. But Champions League is the, you know, the goal. You know, that's the aspiration. So to lift the title there. And you see my boy Chris Richards out there with Bayern, you know, right, doing it big. So, you know, that's the goal there. You know, and that's the aspiration. So.
One of your teammates could be playing in that competition come January. It's still rumors, still things floating around, but we know Brendan Aaronson appears to be on his way to Rebel Salzburg. What are you guys talking about? What do you think when you see that opportunity potentially for your boy?
Yeah, well, one is extreme happiness for him. You know, the guy works his butt off day in and day out. You know, and you see his progression. You've seen his progression. You see how he's grown in his game, you know, in the final product. And I know a lot of people have talked about the final product and what can he do in the final third. And he's shown it this year, you know, one, scoring goals, but two, getting assists as well, you know, finding pockets and creating plays. So, you know, credit to him for the hard work he's put in. But I've seen it in him, even when he was a little scruffy, you know, he's passionate guys, you know, back in the academy. So, you know, to see him now come up, and I still tell him he needs to bulk up a little bit, try and get him on the Moadu weight plan.
He doesn't need to be top heavy. Do the bottom half.
Like, Mo can't even fit through doorways. You can't tell him to get on that.
He's picking up something off the ground and falling.
I know, man. I know. I always give Mo credit for for it, but you know, it's no credit to B though. I'm happy for him, you know, and it's it definitely ignites a fire in all the young guys as well. You know, we go against each other day in and day out. I give him a hard time. I like to beat him up a little bit to prepare him for what it's going to be like going to his different center backs. But ultimately, you know, he stood up to the task, and you know, he's now rumored to be in a really good club. You know, with a really good coach, an American coach that is too.
Well, you said you rough him up. So who on the union squad gives you a tough time? Who's that guy that you know, I got to deal with this guy in training. He's going to try and hit me, or he's going to try and push me to get to be better.
Yeah, well, Ale, he's one. Ale has always been that rough and tough guy. You know, roll up his sleeves, get dirty, you know, when he has to, put in a late tackle, let you know he's there. So he's one guy. You know, Fontana, don't sleep on him.
Fonti
is one guy who will. He has that Ale zest to him, you know,
okay,
where he lets you know he's there. But then you got guys like Corey Burke. You know, he's one who's gonna rough you up. You know, he's gonna let you know that it's not gonna be a fun day. You know, so in training, going against him is something that I look forward to, relatively. but it's something that, you know, you get a taste of, you know, at the highest levels. These guys aren't gonna let you have a good day. So having that practice is something that I carry into matches.
All right, Mark, we could do this forever, but we got to do rapid fire to get you out of here and all get right. you up on your day, a nap, whatever it is that you got coming up. All right, five aside time. You got first pick, whole squad's at your disposal. Who are you taking?
I'm talking young guys or veterans or
anybody. You can anybody take, you're just trying to win the game, Mark. You're just five trying to
aside.
Win. The-
Union five aside.
Union five aside.
You got to pick all right. your squad.
All right. All right, I'm going to pick them. I got Brendan, Fonti. I got Montero. I got Jack Elliott.
Okay. There's no El Seno in this group.
Yeah, no El Seno.
I'd be tempted to go El Seno.
No, because I like to go against El Seno. I don't want to take the easy way out. I want to take the easy way out.
Best cheesesteak spot for you, and what's the order?
Ooh. Ooh, 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 ooh. Honestly, I don't eat cheesesteaks like that, but...
But if
I had to, there's a little spot I went to with Matt Real. It's a little hole in the wall spot. I forget the name of it. But I think those are the best spots.
So it's not a gym.
No.
Nah, I agree with that. Those the famous ones, not actually that good.
Yeah, I tell people that come to Philly, you know, you got to find, you know, of course, you know, credit to the, you know, big name spots. But I think the hole in the wall spots sometimes have that chip on their shoulder. So that's what makes it.
So you're not going to give away that gem then? You just
keep it to yourself.
Okay. All right.
Everybody knows Wawa. I love me some Wawa when I come to that area. What is your hoagie order? What are you going to the screen and punching in?
I get the Italian sub with pepper jack cheese. I get some some sweet peppers on there, some spinach, and light mayo on the bread. With which bread do I get? I think I get the whole wheat because I'm healthy.
You go. You're not a red wine vinegar guy on the Italian.
I get it on the side.
Okay.
Get it on the side.
Oh, right.
I'm just making sure.
You pour it on there, it gets soggy, so I don't want it to.
He doesn't trust them.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Make the case for the Bronx, BX, over all the other boroughs.
Number one.
Well, yeah, I knew you would say that, but make your case, man. What's the case?
All right. Well, one, we got the best ballers. I think everybody in the Bronx know we got the chip on our shoulder. Two, we got the best accent. If you go to any of them, it's the best accent.
Oh, that's fair.
And you know, so I think those are just two that I'm gonna leave out there. But three, we got the best basketball players as well. You know, okay. I want to put that out there as well. And last, we got the Yankees. So sorry, Charlie.
Don't worry about it. My Red Sox are good. Don't worry about it. Favorite non soccer athlete.
I'd say LeBron or Roger Federer.
Okay. Ooh, that's a good one.
What would be the toss up between those two? How do you decide number one in that case, or can you?
I think they're great in different ways. LeBron he has the shoulders to carry the load, and I think that's something that I've always admired about him. You know, he holds himself to a high standard in everything he does. And two, Roger Federer is just absolute class. He's a class player and class athlete. And he's a champ, you know, so both of them are champs, but you know, Roger Federer and how long he's been doing it. Same with LeBron is what sets him apart. So
do you play any tennis, Mark?
I've tried, but it's not good.
Just like basketball. Yeah.
Nah.
Basketball is, We're gonna leave that aside.
Yeah.
You still feel a little regret, huh? You still feel like you had an itch that didn't get scratched with basketball?
Listen, I didn't have the height.
You didn't have the height.
I didn't hit my growth spurt until like I was already like, nah, football's for me. Football's for me. And then I was like, I probably could have, but nah, football's for me.
Stop.
All right, last one, man. Who is the best center back in MLS in your opinion? It can be you if you wanna go out there on that limb.
Best center back.
Or it could be who you admire most. Take it however you want it, man.
So we got guys. We'll leave myself out of it, you know.
Yeah.
I don't want to come off as arrogant or, oh my gosh, you know. But you know, again, I have confidence in myself. But I think Chad Marshall and Michael Parker are the two people who I look at. And Michael Parra. You know, those are three guys I'd say who are class. You know, all champions. All of us played at the highest level, but each have different, you know, attributes that I try and, you know, learn from. You know, and Chad Marshall, his intelligence is his, as well as Michael Parker's, their intelligence, and they're reading games and putting fires out before they happen. You know, Michael Parr, his ability, wants to dominate strikers, you know, and give them a tough day. And then going back, Eddie Pope, you know, he's another guy.
Eddie Pope.
Legend. Yeah, exactly. It's simple as legend. So yeah, I say those are four guys.
All right, I have one more. I always say that. I'm like, I'm going to end, then I have one more. When you think about your dreams, when you watch European soccer, when you watch the international game, who's the guy that you will always watch at the center back position and who you think, maybe I have a little something like him?
I would say, even though he's not the center, David Alaba. In a sense, you know, he's a little undersized. He's still a ball and center back. He has the athleticism, which I kind of have as well. Or Virgil van Dijk, his range of passing. You know, that's something that I really like. And Koulibaly. So,
okay, right. Giants or Knicks?
Giants. Whoa! Giants or Knicks?
Like, yeah, you got to choose between the two. Yeah.
Bad or worse?
Oh my gosh. We be just coming at you hard.
You can't
have the Patriots, you know, in the backyard. I forgive you for that. But
I'll take the Giants right now, just because, you know, we were able to beat the Patriots and Tom Brady twice, you know. So
how many rings do you got?
Listen, we took down the Giants twice, okay? All right.
All right, man. Mark McKenzie, we've had a great time. Best to you. Best of the union. We'll be watching, man. Thanks for joining us.
But we'll wait for that announcement. We'll wait for that club announcement.
For sure.
Okay. Or a shield or an MLS Cup. You know, whatever order you want to take this in.
Hey, I'll gladly take all of them. So, you know,
Look,
I appreciate it, guys. And thanks for having me.
Oh, Charlie, Mark McKenzie. What a man. What a man. That was fun. That was like the most fun I've had an interview in a long time on this show, man.
Yeah, he's a top man. And what I love about him is he has perspective, he has experience, and he's used it to his advantage. And to me, he knows he's only getting better. He looks forward to every match. He's a match, you know, he changes the game for the Philadelphia Union. When he's on the field, his presence, his ability to play the ball in the back, like you talked about, it allows Philly to play a certain way and to take advantage of Brendan Aaronson in those pockets and Montero in those pockets. When Ilsenio comes in as a substitute, being able to find him, when your center back can make the game, it allows you to play more aggressive, higher up the field, and take risks and chances. And so this player, he's destined for Europe.
Now, look, we know that outside backs are almost never in the running for Defender of the Year. Right now, my top three Defender of the Year, Mark McKenzie,
mm-hmm.
Your guy, Jonathan Mensah, although the Crew are having a little bit of a tough moment, and then Walker Zimmerman. For me right now, that's your top three. That's the podium, so to speak, in Defender of the Year. So we'll see how that all shakes out, how form, how results, how it all goes for those guys. But it's awesome for Mark after a really, really tough 2019 to be in this position, not just to be shouted out by his coach and by us and by everybody else in this league, but also looking to the future of his career, both internationally and at club, and saying, boy, the future is really bright. So congratulations to him. We love watching the union. Speaking of awards, though, the Continental Awards, of course, will be coming out mid-November. One of the categories we do, and we always focus on categories that, let's just say, normally leave out people that need to be honored. So that whether that's the Osvaldo Alonso D-Mid of the Year or the Bobby Warshaw Left Back of the Year that also could be a right back if we want it to be, or like the David Akam Most Valuable Player that'll never get hype but should, or the fill-in-the-blank Young Player of the Year. By the way, we don't have a name for that one yet, so let us know. We need to do, as we have before, the Domestic Player of the Year, American or Canadian. Mark McKenzie, definitely in that conversation. Jordan Morris, I would think, is in that conversation. Who else to you? Maybe a Richie Larea might be able to wiggle his way into that. I mean, I think Jonathan Osorio is maybe even overlooked in this case. He's moved back for Toronto FC and been a rock for them with Michael Bradley out. For you, as you think about a Domestic Player of the Year, one, who should we be naming this award afterward? Because we can't do Landon Donovan. He's already got MVP. And two, who are some names that you would throw into that hat?
I think it's a no-brainer for Jordan Morris to have him be kind of this guy who's, I think, taken a step up in his game, his level, his approach, being able to influence in different ways, his combination play. And it does help you when you're playing with Raul Ruiz Diaz and you're playing with Nico Ladero. But I think his influence has made Seattle a better team. And so
he's just as big a weapon
as
both of those guys.
Yeah.
Really, even though I think Ladero is the MVP of that team, he is the weapon. Like, he's weaponized by them, and he's been amazing so far.
And I think you have to look across the league of teams who are competing for, you know, the supporter shield. And so when you look at the standings, the top four, Toronto FC, who's been, you know, someone who's...
I mean, I think Richie Larea could wiggle his way in there for Toronto FC. And again, Jonathan Osorio could. Io Akinola maybe could too.
I think he's on the verge. I don't think he's there yet.
Okay, so he's a young player of the year candidate for you. Okay, what about a Chris Mueller?
I think he's definitely played above his level of expectation, and I think everyone else's level of expectation for Chris Mueller, but still not in that category of like really being, you know, in a position to be the top domestic player. I look at Alejandro Bedoya.
Okay.
And he's a player that really stands out to me as not getting the credit anymore. He's an old timer now. He's not a young buck. He's a grizzled vet. But his influence, and it's really his mentality to set the tone and hold everybody accountable for the Philadelphia Union. So that's another player who's not going to get a ton of credit this year, but deserves it.
Who would you name this award after? Like, is this like an Eddie Pope domestic player of the year? Is this
a Kyle Beckerman?
A Kyle Beckerman, yeah. I'm trying to think of somebody who was great for a long time,
okay,
but maybe didn't get the credit that they deserved.
Then definitely D-Row. It should be the D-Row award because this was a league MVP. This is a player who individually was brilliant at times, consistent, could score the unlikely goal from incredible goal from all over the field, half field, 35 yards out. He could combine. He could make it look pretty, or he could make it look nasty. Either way, this is a player that I don't think got enough credit. Neither did Shaury Joseph.
Yeah, so that's a fair one though.
Shaury Joseph probably is the league's best defensive midfielder to ever step foot on the pitch. But because of, playing for the Grenada national team, which is a small island, you're not going to get the plaudits there. And Celtic came in to purchase him and the Revolution didn't sell. So I don't think he ever got the credit he deserved. And he was such a beast. I mean, someone who really controlled the midfield. You had to play around him. You couldn't go down. You had to use the width. You had to use your wingers because he literally grabbed the game and he wouldn't relinquish it. He was a player who really controlled it, dominated. I think he should be deserving of.
What if we did the Shaury Joseph, basically the Caribbean player of the year? I'm digging that. Look, we'll see. We're going to make these decisions. We're going to finalize these lists. If you have a suggestion for what they should be named, we're willing to change it. It doesn't have to be the Ozzie Alonso defensive mid of the year. It could be the Shaury Joseph. It doesn't have to be. Actually, it does have to be the Bobby Warshaw left back of the year for the outside backs.
Yeah.
I demand that that's the case. But we are willing to change these. Mm-hmm. We're willing to add categories.
Well, Kevin Molino hops into the
Kevin Molino's right there, hot boy.
Hot boy.
You know who I'm nominating, and that brings me to another point on these. We want to know what you think they should be, both the awards themselves to honor people that don't normally get honored by the traditional award process, maybe a front office award, something like that. We also want to know what to name them. We want to have awards for the mailbag that are completely silly or serious, but would never make the official one. We'll give those priority when we hit the mailbag every single show. And we want maximum transparency. So there is going to be a nomination process. We will put out tweets to be considered. Players, front office, coaches, whatever it ends up being, they have to be nominated. So look out for those at Extra Time. We'll put out the nomination and put your people in. Reply. If you don't reply, if you don't put your players, the people that you think deserve it in there, they won't be eligible. So look out for those. We'll choose a top four. We'll do votes. We'll have 6 votes, including listeners. And the listener vote, if there's a 3-3 tie, will be the tiebreaker. So we're going to do those in mid-November. Look out for those. Let's talk about some midweek action before we get out of here. Charlie, Peter Vermees came on Instant Replay with us this week. Now, he didn't know that he did, but we did take his quotes after this Dallas game, which they lost 1-0, and inserted it in because he basically was doing Instant Replay after this match about the late call foul on Gadi Kinda. Just give people a preview of your thoughts on this. Not no call, because it was a call, but a little bit of a controversial, let's call it, from Armando Villarreal.
Yes. There's a shot that's really hit with pace right at Jimmy Maurer, the keeper for Dallas. He doesn't catch it. He doesn't punch it. He bats it down right in front of him. Right in front of him in the six-yard box. Now, SKC's Gadi Kinda comes in, cuts in front of the FC Dallas defender, and gets a shot off. Now, it's a loopy shot. It's almost like one of those like bloopy type shots.
It's a miss hit. And Maurer just kind of paws it.
And he paws it, doesn't catch it, paws it, and it rolls off his fingers and drops. Kinda anticipates it, is running towards the ball, and this is all in the six-yard box, gets in front of the ball. Jimmy Maurer then grabs Kinda, literally wraps his left arm around him and pulls him down. The ball goes into the back of the net. And the referee, Villarreal, calls a foul.
On Kinda.
On Kinda, going the opposite way. this is not only a penalty kick, but it's also a red card because he's not attempting to play the ball. He is taking Gadi Kinda down, preventing him from scoring the goal because that's exactly what was going to happen. He said, I'm going to foul him here to end it. It's a red card and a penalty kick.
And by the way, Johnny Russell did score a goal in all of this craziness.
Right.
But because of the foul, it didn't count. It's a crazy moment to
me. It's a crazy moment. It is. You could have just not called it and said, it's a goal.
Just let it go.
And let it go. Perfect. But the fact that the whistle was blown for a foul.
Can I just explain to you what I think Armando Villarreal was thinking? And I wish we had like the pool reporter report off this game. I think Villarreal thought that the ball was pawed and Gadi Kinda ran into the chest of Jimmy Maurer.
Yeah, that's not what happened though.
Who then is wrapping him up. But then the wrap up, that doesn't make... I don't know. I can understand why Peter Vermees was blowing a gasket on this one. We had a bunch of people text us and tweet at us saying, one, that this was certainly a PK and was a blown call.
Certainly. But
then we had some FC Dallas fans saying Peter Vermees is a whiner and he should deal with the fact that his team lost at home, which I don't know about that.
It was definitely revved up from the last encounter these two teams had, and FC Dallas, they won. And they were, you know, Peter Vermees was complaining about the time wasting and
blah. Yes.
And yes, that I agree with for the FC Dallas fans. Don't complain about the why, you know, the time wasting and how the game is played. If you have the lead, all teams waste time. That's how it is.
Facts.
That's a fact. So get on with it. But as a manager for a team, I think you're just trying to take the pressure off. It's what some, you know, Pep Guardiola, that's what Jose Mourinho, that's what Arsene Wenger have done in the past. You try and take the pressure off the result and put it on the referee or put it on a team. It's what it's done. But this in this case, he's right. He is right.
How about this? Travis hit us up. He says, how come Hani Mukhtar is better than Lionel Messi? Which, no, false, but is funny, but also encouraging that Hani Mukhtar for Nashville go out and get a 3-1 win. Hani Mukhtar has, you know, I'll put that free kick goal he scored right up against Nico Ladero's free kick from the weekend, which was incredible. And then the first finish, if that Hani Mukhtar shows up and Jander Cadiz becomes something more than a DP that's not fit, this Nashville team might actually have something in the playoffs. And Jander Cadiz came out of this game. He made his debut. He's the new DP they signed from Benfica on loan, the Venezuelan. And he said, look, I'm not fit. Personally, I'm not in rhythm. It's been 7 months for me between playing real games. What the team's doing, I'm here for that. I think I can fit in, but I'm not yet ready to impact the team in that way. But if they have Hani Mukhtar doing the sort of things that he did against Houston, which to be fair is not a playoff team right now, which is like at the bottom of the Western Conference. If he's doing that and Jander Cadiz becomes something more, even just a consistent guy who makes the right runs and finishes when the ball's at his foot, if Leal has a little bit of something and their defense stays the same, I think that Nashville has an opportunity to make a run because both these goals in this game from Hani Mukhtar are really, really special. Let's talk quickly about Chicharito, though, and let's talk about the Galaxy because I don't think this is on Chicharito anymore. Chicharito, speaking of convenient fall boys and excuses, I think we're past the point of throwing Javier Hernandez under the bus. They lose 4-0 to San Jose. Just get worked.
Yeah, it comes down to coaching. Let's call it what it is. Schelotto has not done a good job. You have Christian Pavone, who everyone in this league can see is a game changer, one of the best players in this league, pound for pound. Just has a lot of quality, whether it's dribbling players 1v1, creating his own goal. He's got pace, acceleration, intelligence. Tries to do too much because that's all he can do with how LA Galaxy are set up. Sebastian Legette, Jonathan Dos Santos. You throw in Chicharito. But Chicharito is not looking like Chicharito because of the style of play. You're not getting opportunities. For Chicharito to thrive, one, you have to be getting in the advanced positions in the field to provide service that will make him look good with his movement. He's one of the best strikers in the world when it comes to movement in the box. But if a striker is not getting opportunities or chances to thrive on that movement, then he's useless.
Well, they're completely predictable.
Useless, yes. And that's how it was with Zlatan Ibrahimovic. But Zlatan is Zlatan. So you can be predictable as you want, but you can't stop Zlatan 1v1.
Yeah, he might suplex a guy right. And like run through three dudes and throw a bike on the top of your head. Whereas that's just not cheat treat, though.
But at the end of the day, the tactics are rubbish. The style of play is rubbish. And so no matter how much talent you have, if there's no direction, if there's no real philosophy to the way you play, you end up losing 4-0 to San Jose, who is the most up and down team I think I've ever come across in this league.
That's saying something.
It is saying something. So what I'm getting at is there needs to be some changes, I think, within LA Galaxy, because they are far too talented to be putting up these horrible performances. And it's not down to talent. It's not down to, man, we're not investing in the right place. You just got Yoni Gonzalez, right? Like, you have Christian Pavone, a Boca Juniors star.
Jonathan Dos Santos is one of the best midfielders in the entire league.
Yes.
And so is Sebastian Lletget, by the way.
Yes. So, yes. My point is, you haven't addressed the big problem with the LA Galaxy, which is the defending. The defending has been shambles. They've been in shambles for far too long. And two
years.
If I'm an LA Galaxy fan, what are you looking at? What are you watching? How are you not complaining? That it's the style. It's the approach to the matches. It's what we've talked about the whole time. It's the coaching. That is what it comes down to. The coaching, putting your team in a position to succeed. Done.
They had a standard, man. Yeah, they had a standard. They're nowhere near it. Even my LA Galaxy shrine cannot help with this. So I think, look, we spoke to Dennis DeCloso on the show a couple months ago, and they had a little bump that was short-lived. Dennis DeCloso was very honest about how they're evaluating every part of the club right now. We will see what that means in the long term. Let's, before we get out of here, do our MLS Predict 6 presented by BetMGM. Of course, every weekend packed up with games. You can choose six of them, choose the result, choose a little secondary item to predict, whether it be like first goal score or total goals, whatever it might be. It's different for each game. This time we're doing Columbus NYCFC Sunday, 6 p.m. Eastern. That's ESPN Plus and DAZN in Canada. Columbus lose for the first time, I believe, the FC Cincinnati in hell is real. That's not good.
Nope.
We were heaping a lot of praise on him. We were really excited about him. Dave, most of all, before we get to a prediction, we will. What is going on with the crew right now? Is it just, keep it simple, stupid, Lucas Zelrayan and Darlington Nagbe, who, by the way, if he would have stayed healthy, would have been in our domestic player of the year conversation and might still be if he comes back in time.
And Room.
Is it as simple as that?
And throw in Eloy Room as well.
Yeah, that's a good point too.
Like Andrew Tarbell's not Eloy Room. Let's also make sure that people know you're missing your star goalkeeper. One of the premier goalkeepers in this league and arguably two of the best midfielders in this league. Darlington Nagbe, we know what he brings to the team and the game changer that he is as far as like keeping possession, getting the ball. You can play to his feet and you know, whether he's surrounded by two or three defenders and get out of trouble, because he is that release valve.
As Caleb Porter said, he is the best linking midfielder in the league. I think that's period. That's no true. Doubt. And when Lucas you have Zelrayan. The best linking midfielder in the league and he's linking to Lucas Zelrayan, who can score from just about anywhere and has an eye for a pass that Caleb Porter again said he needs in his team. He needs that 10 that can do that. You're not going to be the same team. So I'm not going to give up on the crew in any way. And I actually think, I'm not saying that this sets up well for them, but if they can get those guys back with three or four games left, that has to be fairly quickly now in the regular season and build a rhythm. It's exactly what Caleb Porter told us when we interviewed him in the bubble in Orlando, which was everything that we are doing is building towards one goal, which is to be at our very, very best in the playoffs for MLS Cup. It's not about winning MLS's back. It's not about, you know, this moment right now, though we need the results to get us in a position to make that MLS Cup run. So if they can get Nagbe back, if they can get Room back, if they can get Zelrayan back with time to build rhythm, and I think rhythm's going to be massive in these playoffs because you only have 90 minutes.
Agreed.
They can be an MLS Cup contender, but as they're constructed right now, I don't think they're there. On the flip side, NYCFC, like, who's going to score goals? Where's their team?
Ronnie Dyla has a lot to figure out because Tati Castellanos can be that guy. He can be that goal scorer. He had a ton of success last year before Ronny Dyla. But Alexander Ring, another player that I rate, he's one of those players who I think really gets it. You know, whether it's the defensive side of the ball, his work rate, his command, good touches, sees the field well. I think they're playing him too high up the field. I think he needs to be back to where Patrick Vieira had him, the engine of the team. They haven't had Maxi Morales. That's a big piece. You're missing, you know, one of the best passers in the league. So they still have, I think, time to get back into a rhythm and consistency. But you need Maxi Morales back, and Tati Castellanos needs to be that goal scorer you can depend on. You lost. What I think you lost is one player who can really change the game for you. And, you know, Hebert is one of those players who I think we saw last year who can score goals, makes good runs in the box, hasn't had the best year. And then you lose him to an ACL tear. Yeah, that and then Mitrica, for as talented as he was, I never thought that Ronny Dyla rated him because he didn't really play him in a position to succeed. Then he starts back-to-back braces, and then he's gone to you know, the Middle East. For me, Ronny Dyla has to figure out the best combination of players and where they position on the field. Alexander Ring, you lose James Sands now to a broken foot. He's out. So bring Alex Ring back into his natural position, a holding midfielder, next to Keaton Parks, Maxi Morales ahead of him, and then Tati Castellanos at the tip of the spear. Then you have a quality side because you still have Tenerholm, who is probably going to win that outside back award, the Bobby Warshaw Award, because he's been Richie Larea and him have been the two outstanding outside backs this season for the league. And then Matarit on the left, I think, are players who can really make an impact on the offensive side of the ball as well as be standout 1v1 defenders.
All right, let's do it. Our MLS Predict 6 presented by BetMGM. Pick of the week, we're doing Columbus NYC. That's Sunday again, 6 p.m. Eastern, ESPN Plus and DAZN. What's the result, man? What are you taking? Yeah, exactly. I think both fan bases are feeling a little bit like that right now with the injuries and then the form. I'll start. I'm going draw.
Yeah, I'm going draw.
I don't think either of these teams right
one,
has the like the cutting edge mm-hmm. that it's going to take to get it over on the other side.
I'm going
maybe
1-1.
Closer to playoffs. So you take 1-1. I can't see them getting two each. I'm going to go 1-1 as well. So we're sitting on the same thing. Draw Columbus NYCFC. The other game, Chicago SKC. Red Bulls Orlando, which should be actually a really, really fun one. Toronto Atlanta. Portland LAFC. San Jose and Seattle. Anything you got left in the tank, Charlie, before we get out of here? Any thoughts, any feelings, any messages?
I've emptied the tank. All I know is that around this time is where we start to see teams either pick up the slack and get rolling heading into the playoffs, like the New England Revolution.
I was about to say, we're about to talk about 2014, aren't we?
Yeah, the Revs are starting to look good, and you got Carlos Heel back in the building. It's not a coincidence that this team is starting to get going, and then you added Lee Wynn, and now you get Carlos Heel. Adam Buxa, if you watched him last night, looked like the player they were hoping to get, and he struggled all year. So that's all I'm going to say. Watch out for the Revs. I've said it. That's it. That's all okay. I got to say.
Behind the scenes, producer Anders, quote, wrap this. I can't stand it. And so I guess we have to do that. Make sure that you are registered to vote, everybody. I know it's shutting down in different states right now, but if you're not registered, do so. Civic duty. It's our responsibility as citizens.
Yes.
So get on that and get a voting plan in place. With that, big thanks to Mark McKenzie. We're out of here. We'll see you on Monday, everybody. Enjoy your weekend.